Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence, and featuring Michael Santucci, co-chair of the Intellectual Property Division of the Broward Bar. From the law firm of Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, President Trump signed an executive order regarding North Dakota's oil pipeline, where American Indian protesters were firmly against allowing this pipeline for fears of environmental pollution. Addressing these issues regarding American Indians and tribal governments, from the National Native American Bar Association, board member Robert Sanook. I'd first like to welcome our legal panel host, Gary Singer.
Hey, how you doing, Phil? How you doing, Touche?
How you doing, Gary? Super lawyer, Gary.
Super lawyer. You're a super lawyer yourself.
Gary Singer. Yes, boy, we are.
Mutual fans here.
Yes, wanted to speak to my music clients out there and any local songwriters or local artists. Legal News and Review does support local music.
You bet.
We are a South Florida radio show, although you can hear us worldwide or anywhere else the internet is available. But submit your songs to us to get them on the air to info@500law.com. That's info@500law.com.
If I give Phil a bucket, can he carry a song in?
I guess so. Or can Gary, I mean, I understand Gary sings in the shower.
I do. I was born a singer, and I've been a singer my whole life.
How would I know that?
How do you know that?
I don't know. That's for another conversation.
And Phil, I told you that video was private.
Oh, gosh. Can't make this stuff up. You know, I want to make a statement. As a child growing up, we played Cowboys and Indians. And sincerely, I always wanted to be an Indian. I mean, I've even done bow and arrow hunting as well in Illinois. Never caught anything, but it was certainly, enjoy being part of the nature as well. And I'd like to say good afternoon to Robert Sanook.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You know, Robert, when I contacted you, it was amazing your knowledge and understanding, but now I understand a little more about you doing research. You have a direct connection with American Indian. What would that be?
Well, I'm an enrolled member of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians in North Carolina. That's where I grew up, on the reservation in North Carolina, where my grandfather was the chief there for 8 years. And my grandmother was on the tribal council for 32, and then my father started the Florida Governor's Council on Indian Affairs in 1976 with Reuben Askew. A real Indian? Is that what you'd say?
A real Indian?
I don't just say I have an Indian princess in my ancestry.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, I think that it's totally cool. I used to produce a program called EcoWatch with the United Nations Environmental Program. And Eric Faltz, who was in charge of that at the time, it's one of my most pleasurable productions, sincerely. And it's interesting because the American Indian was doing things that now is in mainstream, like organic as well. They had a love for the land. They didn't take more than they need, and they certainly didn't take the abuse that, unfortunately, what has happened to the environment. As a environmentalist, I'm not a tree hugger, mind you. I'm pragmatic. But what I don't understand is that, the way I understand it, this pipeline is going over Indian land.
Yeah, the perspective is obviously one that the media controls, and that's controlled by the big corporations who buy the advertising. But historically, this portion of North Dakota, 200,000 acres were submerged under a dam project back in the 60s. They tried to control the Missouri Dam. They put five dams. The largest one is on Lake Oahe, which is where this pipeline is going. Mm-hmm. And they displaced the entire Cheyenne River Sioux and Standing Rock Sioux tribes from their ancestral homelands. They had timber, they had agriculture, they were self-sufficient. And in the middle of the winter, they removed them all and pushed them off, and they sat there. Literally, there were stories of the members of a tribe crying and weeping as they watched the water flood where they had grown up, where their ancestors were buried. Sitting Bull is buried there. and he's now underwater.
Oh, my God.
So this is 1960, and in the name of progress and energy to try and tame the Missouri River, which is counter to the Native American ideology, you can't tame that which is free, and the river runs free. So they tamed it and flooded this area, and they never compensated the tribe for taking this land. It was never paid for.
Wait a minute. Backtrack. They never paid for this land, and yet they got ownership?
Yeah. The Treaty of 1851 gave some 10 million acres to 10 different tribes, and then over the next 100 years, they slowly were pushed off for gold rush, energy, and other reasons. There was a railroad that was put through, which is now the tracking by the Army Corps of Engineers, where the pipeline is being placed, and it runs underneath the lake at one point. Mm-hmm. The irony is, initially the pipeline was supposed to go through Bismarck, North Dakota.
Right.
And then everyone protested because they said, oh, no, this is way too dangerous, and we don't want to have our area affected by this possible leaking oil that would come through the Bakken Shale. And so they moved it down south underneath this water. But this is the water supply for the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, which is about a half a mile south of the lake itself. There has been 8 million gallons of oil leaked in North Dakota since 2004. 8 million gallons. And so it's not a matter of whether or not there will be a leak. It's when there's going to be a leak. And right now there's roughly 275 spills every year from pipelines. There's some 71,000 miles, of pipeline in the United States. And this is only about 1,100 miles. But it's going to leak. They just had a leak in January of gasoline, 140,000 gallons. When gasoline gets in the dirt, it never goes away. So you can't clean it up. And that just happened about a month ago.
How many oil spills, how many train accidents where oil gets spilled, how many is it going to take before this country starts to reverse the trend of corporations running almost every aspect of our lives?
You know, what? I have two questions. I'm going to ask you first, and then I have a question a little more on point. Mm-hmm. But do what? So we should all not drive cars or volunteer Uber?
Doesn't it seem like, you know, our Constitution has rights for individuals, civil rights for individuals? Don't you feel?
No, our Constitution doesn't have a single civil right for anybody. Our Constitution limits the governments for taking away rights that God gave us. But, and don't ever forget it.
The Bill of Rights, it applies to individuals.
The Bill of Rights.
Don't you feel as a citizen that corporations, they are digressing.
I lost control.
You've lost the show.
But don't you feel that corporations have more power, more rights than you today? Like, and it just happened like in our lifetimes, in the last 50 years.
In reality, yes.
But here's my question on point. And I'll school him on Constitution. Later.
Well, why don't you just tell me what oil companies to invest in? If we can't fight them, join them? Because that's what people are doing now.
Clearly.
So, yeah.
So this issue is obviously horrendous, and it's horrendous for the people effective. And I don't want to step away from that for a second. But with any kind of large project, there's always a NIMBY, a not-in-my-backyard thing. So, you know, what is the solution? Obviously, despite what the Tooch is saying, oil's got to flow. Where should it flow? How do you fix this?
Well, it's not. I think the first question is:
are we
a country that follows the rule of law? I mean, one of the things we look at in our justices is, you know, and they say, well, are you going to side with this group or not? And every good judge says, I follow the rule of law, and the rule of law says that this property belongs to the Native Americans. It also says the Army Corps of Engineers is supposed to do an environmental impact study. They have not done.
So why has this not happened?
They just have not done it. And because they are being directed by whoever's in charge, Obama signed a stop order, and now Trump has signed a go order. And so while that individual is in charge, whoever that is, and has the authority to help the Army Corps of Engineers or excuse their obligations, and no one asked them to, they just filed a suit February 9th. The Standing Rock Sioux filed a suit to force the Army Corps to do the environmental impact. But in answer to your question, the reason there's this push right now is because oil is almost done. I mean, the Bakken Shale is a fracking. There's some 20 million gallons of brine spillage that's happened in North Dakota. That's the result of the fracking process. No one knows what the long-term.
And earthquakes.
And earthquakes. No one knows what the long-term effect is.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is the Bakken Shale is a new process for them to take oil that they previously could not get access to. The oil companies realize that the times are changing. We are now discussing solar, hydrogen, any number of ways, wind, other ways,
right,
to natural gas, everything else. And they are trying to squeeze every last drop of profit that they can get before, in the next 10 or 20 years, this outdated, antiquated technology is gone.
Well, yeah. What's going to force them to convert? What's going to force? Because I feel like this GO order, all it does is it kind of sets back the trend toward non-fossil fuel forms of energy. And what's the incentive now for oil companies to take a risk and to invest in new technologies?
Capitalism. It's the only answer
that's ever going to work. Well, biofuels are starting
to catch on. It's the only answer that's ever going to work. When it makes more sense for the most people to find a better way to do it, a better way will be found.
But, you know, as an attorney, how can these rights be taken away like that? They haven't paid for the land. Am I understanding
this
right?
Yeah, this is my big problem.
I don't get that.
What the heck is going on
here?
Well, there was a stop order for years. Where were the lawsuits?
And where's the mainstream media?
In the 1970s, there was a large lawsuit filed called the Cobell litigation that affected some 240 tribal members from around the country, where the Bureau of Indian Affairs had mismanaged trust assets, where they had leased some of these mm-hmm. oil reserves, uranium, and other mines to big companies for minimal money and never paid the tribes for it. And that lawsuit went on for 30 years. Every Secretary of Interior, every Secretary of State was held in contempt by every federal court for that whole process. And at the end of it, they finally settled for some $80 billion for the 150 years of mismanagement. We're lawyers. We understand the wheels of justice sometimes turn slowly.
That's pretty slow.
I think what will happen is eventually this case will percolate up and there will be a resolution. But while it's percolating, this oil is still going to move.
Yep. Right.
And as a perfect example, they filed so this land is historically, it's actually a historical landmark by the United States. And the Mandan tribes, there are ancient burial mounds. There has historical significance, let alone cultural significance.
Mm-hmm.
And so this whole process has been, you know, eye-opening for a lot of people. But they found a hieroglyph called the Bear, which the Sioux believe is the beginning of the earth. And you can't see it when you're standing on it, but from up in the air, it's visible. It's some 10,000 square feet. It's huge. And as they uncovered the stones and found them, they raced to the court to stop the dredging. And before the court could even open and hear the issue, Transcontinental moved their tractors over to the site and bulldozed all the stone away.
That's just disgusting.
So it's gone. So as we know, an injunctive relief says irreparable harm. Well, what are we harming? It's gone. It's already out of there. So they're going to keep pumping. It will eventually work out, and then they'll compensate with money. This is all a money factoring process. Mm-hmm. You know, in insurance defense, we see them put money aside, let it grow, let it accrue, and then we settle and we say, okay, we're so sorry that we did these bad things. Here's money. I mean, it happens every single day.
Sure.
It's
a cost of
doing business. So what they've decided is that these Indians, this way of life, their culture, their history, their heritage, what makes them who they are, has a dollar a figure on it. And at some point in time, they will say, here's this money, we're so sorry, and we're done.
In Gary Singer's defense, I don't think that's what he means when he says let capitalism solve the problem. Because the free market,
yeah,
I agree
not
with
at
you.
All what I mean.
Right.
It's
the free market is a solution.
Global problems.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, the reality of that is it's a cold theory, and real people do get hurt sometimes, especially when you have individuals in that free market that way overstep the rule of law. And I have a huge problem with that.
We have battery power coming. You know, Elon Musk is doing some great things. You know, right. My son works at Tesla. He's a designer of their automobiles out there, and they're coming out. I mean, those cars are fantastic, more people are picking them up. They're more going,
and
as the price comes down, more people will do it. So the big problem is, and I think in our country, we need to change our dialogue as to what is energy, what are the impacts of it. I mean, we work downtown and we live in the country, so we've got to commute. And in some states, you know, California especially, they're very progressive. They design city states that are geared around the work itself. So you go to school, you walk, all within walking distance, like a community used to be.
Sure. Sure.
And so when these population centers start doing that again, I think that will change the dialogue.
And, you know, change the dialogue, and that's important, and I see these things coming. I think it's a good thing. But also, you know, you can't just blame oil, right? Because we're going to have batteries, and then battery production is going to
hurt
people.
You can do it for water,
and you're gonna have
water,
solar,
wind.
Well, and solar is going to kill birds. But every bit of progress
I'm against nuclear, I'll tell you that.
One of the best, cleanest, most safe ways. Very good, Phil. Is going to hurt somebody. Yeah. You know, that's the reality. It's not right. It's not fair.
Think,
and it's not good. Yeah. But that's the reality of the world we live in.
Everybody agrees.
I'm not saying it's good, mind right. you.
Everybody agrees that there is some role of government to protect us from, you know, unbridled corporate.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think where we disagree is what is the role of government? How far should the government go to protect the people's water supply, the food supply, the fish supply?
Well, the Army Corps of Engineers, that's their job. And the Clean Water Act came out. That was what they were supposed to do, was to do the environmental impacts. Ironically, in this situation, they've said there is no impact. It's just a pipe in dirt. And,
oh my
God. And so they're saying that the pipe is not impacting the environment because it's self-contained. But EPA says, okay, what's in the pipe? And they have not answered that question. Yeah. They don't even look at that. Yeah. They look at the implement that's being put in the ground and what the impact that implement has, not the stuff going through, because they treat that as a transient, temporary situation. It's not a permanent fixure. Well, so that's how they get around it.
Before we go to the next topic regarding the Seminoles.
One last question, if you don't mind. So if this went around this land, where would it go?
Well, it could have tracked in between Bismarck and where the lake is. It still would have had the same, I think, impact and the same threat. You know, when you have 8 million, you know, gallons of oil that's leached out, it's there. It's not going away.
Problem,
it's
right?
going to have a problem. And 275 incidents a year, that's something that we all have to, you know, say, what am I willing to do? What am I willing to give up to make sure that that doesn't continue? But if you want to have some really good background, there's a movie called Flow, which is For the Love of Water, and it shows you the impact that corporations have had on the water industry. I mean, as kids, we grew up drinking out of a tap, and then we're sitting here drinking bottles of water now. Did you ever know that? And then there's Gasland 1 and Gasland 2, which do the fracking analysis and do a very, very good job. And they show the impact and the devastation that happens to communities when we capitalize on our natural resources. One final irony. Mm-hmm. Tribes were nomadic. They became agronomers because they were forced onto reservations, and they gave them the crappiest land to grow and build on. I mean, North Dakota is not exactly a pristine area. But now they found out, as we've capitalized and become an industrial nation, that 80% of the natural gas, oil, and coal reserves are all on reservations.
Wow.
So what's happened now, and you hear President Trump, he's talking about privatizing the tribal lands to allow capitalization to exploit these natural resources. And the question is, what are we as a nation going to do? Are we going to stand up and say, not in my backyard ever? And am I willing to walk a little further, ride a bicycle, not drive as much?
Well, you criticize the media.
It's very hopeful, but unfortunately not very realistic, you know, because people aren't going to be.
You criticize
that's the reality.
You criticize the media on how it's covered, for example, the Dakota pipeline situation, but I'm sure your critique is broader than that. Whether we like it or not, we are the media. We're not exactly mainstream media on the show.
No, but we're responsible. We're responsible journalism. There were thousands of people in August there, and they were touting hundreds.
Yeah. But my question, you're Sun Sentinel, you're media as well, but
that's right, Gary.
How could the media cover this better? How could the media have pipeline situation?
I think all of us would agree that our media today is opinioned. There was a time when it was objective and would say,
Walter Cronkite.
I see this happening. Here I'm reporting what this is going on. Mm-hmm. Instead of now this spin of one side or the other. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember Justice Breyer and Senator O'Connor at a conference saying, the biggest problem facing America today is the lack of civil discourse. And that's the ability to say objectively what you feel without being attacked and an enemy. And that's changing. So the media today's problem is they're no longer the objective reporter of what is going on. They're now saying this, the emotional tax, trying to sell the whatever they can. And even what's his name? The Fox News guy said he screwed up. He shouldn't have.
Well, on both sides. They
paid
find,
so much
they,
money. Yeah. Even CNN said they did the wrong.
They find a demographic that they're going to go after, yeah. and they tell them what they want to hear. Yeah.
It's business, just yeah. like right. any other, like what you're going right. You know, the sad part.
I'd be very missed if we didn't bring this up.
Okay.
And I enjoy the Hard Rock.
Oh, yeah.
And the other one, Coconut Creek.
Yeah.
I didn't know you liked Hard Rock.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you.
And don't forget the Miccosukee's Casino in Chrome. They have a fantastic
one. You work with the Seminoles.
I work with Seminoles and Miccosukee's.
You're a litigator.
Yeah, but who knocked on their door and said, "Hey guys, you're a sovereign nation. Why don't you have a casino?" I mean, whose idea? I mean, how did that come about?
My dad's.
Oh, really?
Are you kidding me? Yeah, I'm not kidding you at all. So in 1979, my father came up with this idea of a management contract program to allow. They were doing greyhound racing and dog racing in Florida, and he said, "Well, why can't we do? It's class two. Why can't we do the same thing on a reservation?" Mm-hmm. And he had already done the smoke-free cigarette shops.
Oh, yeah.
On 441, if you grew up here in South Florida, you saw that. Those days.
Yeah.
And the premise was, if you can go overseas and bring back two cartons of cigarettes, coming on a reservation was like leaving the state. Mm-hmm. You could do the same thing. And they would put 20 people in a car and they'd buy 40 cartons of cigarettes with no tax.
I used to drive my priest out to 441 to buy cartons of cigarettes.
So the same idea came with gaming. And so he and James Billy, a guy named Howard Tommy, they're both the first chairman of the Seminole at the time, put a 5,000-seat bingo hall out at Big Cypress off of Snake Road. I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere on the reservation. And they would bus people down from Minnesota, Wisconsin, Chicago.
Wow.
And they would play bingo all the way down to the reservation. And they would play – they'd lock them in that building for the weekend. And they'd play million-dollar bingo and lightning rounds. And they'd give away Cadillacs and furs. And that's where it began. That's where the idea of gaming on reservations began. Then they took it to Cabazon's. Out in California, there was a very good article in the that Pat Jordan wrote, who's a great author here in South Florida, in the Playboy magazine a few years ago on James Billy and his
articles?
Influence. Yeah, they have articles. They're all articles.
I know.
Is the Isle Casino part of the
No. The misleading issue in Indian country for gaming is there are 562 federally recognized tribes. About 70 of those are gaming tribes. That means tribes who operate some type of a gaming facility, be it a bingo hall or a full class three like you see in Vegas. Of those 70, about 20 are profitable. And that means that they make enough money to pay for all their expenses and left over to help run their business and their governments. The rest of them are really break even because for the most part, tribes are located in very rural areas and you know,
there's not a lot of people coming.
Well, the first rule of business is location, but location.
There are certain myths. An example would be Rush Limbaugh made a comment, not one of my favorite people, but, you know,
I love
to hate him. Yeah, he does like that. But in all reality, that there's a myth that if I have a quarter blood, maybe my great-great-grandmother was Indian, that now I'm entitled to revenue. Matter of fact, not only to revenue, but they're going to pay for my schooling and – is that actually the case?
No, so statistically, the tribes are statistically at a 46% poverty rate. So they're three times the national average.
Wow.
Historically and today, they're the best at the worst. They have the highest suicide rates, highest teen deaths, highest
alcoholism as well.
Alcoholism, yeah. And that's because of their rural nature. I mean, the Cheyenne River Sioux and the Standing Rock Sioux that we're talking about with the Dakota Pipeline, they have never recovered from that 1960 removal, and they have lived in poverty ever since. Of the 535 counties in the United States that are consistently below the poverty level, 85% of those are Native American communities. 85%. So this idea, it is misleading because you see Seminole and how they're
prosperous.
Doing $3 billion a year in revenue. Right. It's crazy. And the Miccosukees, but that is not representative of the Native American community. And what people don't realize is that tribes and Indians pay taxes, federal and state. Mm-hmm. They're not exempt. They pay the highest tax because if they do get a dividend,
so they're not like
it's capital gains.
But they're not like a commonwealth then, like Puerto Rico.
No, not like commonwealth, where you can actually have cockfighting in Puerto Rico as well. So,
gotcha.
That's the only place in the U.S. territories you do that. So it is misleading. So they have a lot of opportunity, but they have been exploited tremendously, and that's unfortunate. And I think the Dakota Pipeline is a good indication.
You know, we'd like to invite you to come back on because it certainly is not enough time. Maybe we'll even do a two-parter because we just scratched the surface on the issues. And the only way change could happen if people become aware. I mean, you enlightened me today, sincerely. I'm shocked over some of the things you said here in the United States, a land that I love, and fortunately land that we took from your ancestors.
You're forgiven.
Robert,
you're all immigrants to us.
That's right. That's right.
Put a stay on the two. No. There's a van outside. You're going to go to help people for that.
Yeah. Right, but if people want more information on these issues.
How do they get a hold of you?
Well, they're happy to call me in my office, 561-302-5297. You can email me at nnancydavid@hotmail.com, ndnlawyer@hotmail.com.
Is that the only area of lawyer practice? You do other stuff?
I do other stuff. I do some property. I'm a litigator, so, you know, I jokingly say door law comes in the door, I'll take it. But primarily about 80% of my practice is, if it's family law, it'll be a Native American divorce or a Native American contract or something that side
gotcha.
Of it.
But
what about, posted on the Native American Bar Association website?
You can find stuff about me there, and they'll get, if you send them an email, they'll reach out to me and pass it on.
Well, thank you very much for coming.
No, thanks for having me.
Out of time.
I'm happy to come back anytime.
We're happy to have you
that.
Back. I certainly would. Thank you again. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And as always, folks,
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, featuring Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Priori, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. They can be reached at 500law.com or at 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for Legal News and Review. Remember, be legal.
Do you need an attorney? Call someone you can trust. The Broward County Bar Association, a not-for-profit organization, was founded in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism, as well as to provide necessary legal services throughout South Florida. The Broward County Bar Association, 3,000 members strong, has attorney members that work throughout the entire state of Florida, as well as nationally and internationally. Remember, the Broward County Bar Association is a referral you can count on. Call the Broward County Bar Association at 954-764-8310 for all your legal needs. A referral you can count on. 954-764-8310 or contact online at browardbar.org. Non-lawyer spokesperson.